the sun. Tell me what you do. Hello and welcome to the Dad Podcast, episode number 4. I am solo in mi casa. Had a guest scheduled, but they booked something because they are very successful. So I had some stuff to talk about, so I figured why not do another solo one. Hope all is well with all of you. I am coming off a trip in Des Moines. That was a lot of fun. Had Chris and his lovely wife came out. They're expecting their second child. And I want to talk about this because I talk about it in my act about how hard it was, the transition for me from going one child to two children. And I guess I have been scaring people who listen to the show or even have listened to my stand-up act. And that was not my intent, but in all seriousness, you're making a huge mistake. So just stop it and don't do it. And that's all I can tell you. But the real reason I brought this up is that I am starting to see the inklings of it getting easy. Like, all it took was Jack, who's, wow, in 2 days is going to be 11 months old. He's now holding his own like little bottle, so we can all kind of sit and eat lunch, and I don't have to necessarily, you know, he's eating solid foods and stuff like that. So I'm like, oh, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. Soon, they won't need me. I don't understand what it is about my desire to not have to take care of people that I love dearly, but it's definitely there. It's definitely there. The real thing, though, I also wanted to bring up was I had an interesting session with my therapist recently that I'm hoping that maybe could apply to some of you guys, where and I'm going to hope, because it's going to be really funny if I get emotional. I lost it in there with the doctor. Absolutely lost it. Like, everything just hit me all at once. And what it was is I'd been talking to him about some of my parental tactics, and I just kind of, I guess I wanted a little bit of validation. I think, in my personal opinion, I think that you should, if you have any kind of feeling of like, and I know we all have that feeling of, I don't know if I'm doing the right thing. For me personally, I guess what I don't want to do is get on a soapbox. For me personally, I wish that our society was a little bit more accepting of an idea of therapy. Not that I have any shame about it or anything like that, but I think it's also because it's helped me so much. So maybe it's just like, you know, people, when they find something, they just want to tell you to do it too. Maybe that's what I'm guilty of, but it really has. And it could just be my therapist. I don't know, but it's helped me find a little bit of peace in my mind and make me happy. And I think I've become a better father because of it. My therapist argues that it's my own interest in becoming a better father, but I really think it's a lot of the tips and tactics. And what he brought up this week, which I thought was interesting, is that he told me about this book called The Whole Brain Child, Whole, W-H-O-L-E, and I've got it on the Kindle. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but he talked about, it came up in the session where he said, well, what you have to think about is you have to connect and then redirect, which I thought was very interesting. He said that everybody is essentially wanting to have the people around them be in tune to their feelings. That's kind of like a common thing that we all think and feel without even being aware of it. And that with your children, he said that whenever something is frustrating you or whatever, he said that they found, and it's that stupid bullshit that we all hear, studies have said, you know, and all that stuff. So you can be listening to this and go, you know what, fuck you, Justin. I knuckle him on the head and then problem solved. And that's fine. I'm not really worried about, you know, that. I'm just, again, food for thought. Take it for what you will. He said you connect to them, you explain to them and make sure that you understand why they feel the way that they feel. So in the example that I was talking about, we had some issues with trying to trim Jacob's toenails, and he would fight you and complain and bitch and moan about it. And I was just like, it just seems like such a silly thing, you know, for him to be upset about. And so the idea would be that I would try to figure out why and explain to him that I understand why he feels this way. And then once I've got him calmed down, like, you know how they get it heightened emotionally, where you're like, you're asking them to do something that they don't really want to do, and then they start escalating. And he says, until you get him to a calm state of mind, he said, then you redirect. In a sense, then you take that moment to say, oh, well, this is the expectation. This is why you want to do that, when they're in a calm, clear head, because otherwise the point of this book or whatever is that it's not really being received. It's still just a fight, and they're not receiving what you're trying to give them. So in a sense, it becomes wasted energy, except for I would argue that occasionally just kind of yelling at my kids makes me feel a little bit better. Maybe that makes me a horrible parent. I think it makes me normal. But I thought that was interesting, and here's why. I brought up a little bit earlier on in the session that he'd kind of asked, like, well, what is your hope for your kids? Because he noticed that I have a lot of concerns and worries, and he's, I guess, trying to figure out if they're valid or not. I don't know. I'm not a therapist. But I said, I look at my grandfather's life. I don't know how many of you are lucky enough to still have your grandparents around or ever had a chance to interact with them. But my grandparents on my dad's side of the family are two people that have had a very simple life. My grandfather, who was on the Father's Day episode, for those of you picking up the show late, it's still available as a bonus episode. Highly recommend listening to that. Excuse me, I'm coming off of having a little bit of like a cold. You might hear it in my voice, so I'm trying not to snot in the microphone, and that's why I'm going quiet every now and then. But anyway. He grew up with nothing, was a kid during the Great Depression. And in that episode, he talks about how he made his toys were used corn cobs, like essentially scraps off of the dinner table corn cobs, which was also their toilet paper at the time. And it's a great episode. I think it's a really great dose of perspective to kind of think of, wow. And it was really interesting for me because I always grew up kind of the joke was that my grandfather was just a dumb redneck. Who was a cotton farmer, and then he had chicken farms when he moved to California with my grandma, and had no money whatsoever, had to borrow money from his dad to pay for the doctor for my father to be born, which, by the way, cost $150. I apologize for making you vomit at that number, because that was also, by the way, for, I'm sure everybody knows, but that's not a copay situation. That's the whole fucking bill. And so they grow up, and I grew up in their house. And then as you start to get older, you just remember them as being grandma and grandpa. No big deal. But then I got older, and you start to realize, you know, bigger picture types of things about life. And all of a sudden, I start being aware of their marriage and their relationship. They don't have flashy stuff. They do the same thing that a lot of people do, where you buy a house, you settle in, and you just wait until you pay it off. And you live within your means, and you're not worried about having the next flashiest thing. And he buys a new truck every now and then because that's what tickles him. And, you know, my dad wishes that they would go on trips and experience, you know, life in the way that he sees it. But from their perspective, they just like hanging out, watching the Atlanta Braves and the San Francisco Giants and their old Western movies and going on walks together. And this is where it kind of hit me that I'm like, I really think they know what they're doing because they love each other. They really do love each other, and they love each other's company. And I know that I have that with my wife. As much as I bitch and moan when I'm here, when I go away, I miss the shit out of my entire family. From literally the minute I get on that fucking plane, I'm just like, God, I wish I could get back home. So I was looking at it. I'm like, well, maybe that's what I want my sons to live like my grandfather. And he always had a joke. He was always had some kind of street joke. And my stepmom is Portuguese, and so he always had a Portuguese joke, as he would call it. And just a redneck dude who said Frisco instead of San Francisco and taters instead of potatoes, and, you know, would get angry at moments, but for the most part lived a happy life full of laughter and joy and simple. I can't stress that enough. Just keep it simple. And so I wanted to find some way of passing that on to my children. So I explained that in a much shorter way to my therapist, and he said, well, how old is he? And I said, he's 80-something, and he goes, well, that's a lot of life. He's got a lot of perspective, a word that, you know, we used to call Abe on the show. And it just hit me like a ton of bricks. Like, I was like, wow, that's a valid point. That I how stupid is it of me to not make that connection of, oh, well, yeah, no shit, Sherlock. He's calm and chilled out because he's been through the fucking hard parts of life. Let's not forget the fact that he was a child during the Great Depression. And it's like, it's pretty easy to kind of let other shit roll off your back, you know, when you've struggled. And you've had that fight, and you're kind of at the end of your fight. You've done everything you're supposed to do, and now it's time for you just to enjoy life. So I was like, oh, wow, how dumb am I? But again, well worth the $20 copay for that little realization, that little aha moment. But the real one came later, where essentially what he had pointed out was that our issues with Jacob had come when he was being asked to do something that he did not want to do, essentially. And which is, it's like, well, I was sitting there going, well, yeah, no shit. That's what kids do. Like, I'm kind of looking at him a little bit like he's crazy. He's like, well, he goes, and I understand that you have to provide guidelines. But he said, I think it's important to understand what is the trigger exactly. Because if you understand the common trigger, then it helps you to understand where it's coming from and why. So, for instance, like I talked about in previous shows, where he wanted to come down and hang out with us and kept talking about being afraid of the pipes and all that stuff. The therapist explained that I was giving him too much credit, that he was trying to manipulate me into, you know, a power situation, that it wasn't that at all. Really, he just wanted to hang out with us, and that if anything, he heard the water go off in the neighbor's shower through his wall, and then that heightened his desire to really just hang out with us, and it gave him an excuse. That ultimately, all he wanted to do was be closer to mom and dad. And if you look at it from that standpoint, you see what I'm saying? Like, for whatever reason, my brain was wired that if I look at it, oh, well, he's fighting for power, I have to win, this is a battle. When in actuality, he just wanted to hang out with his mom and his dad. Even though I still need him to go to bed, your brain, I feel, processes it emotionally in a different way. So then we'd kind of talked about that, and then I talked about a more personal thing that had less to do with parenting and more to do with my own personal life, and that this Clorox thing that I did, as much as I fought through it, but I did notice that I did a couple of sets on my own before the night before the big finale, and they went horrible. Like, I bombed. I tanked. And I got in my head. Like, I started to lose confidence. I was like, oh, no. And I kept having to tell myself, because I've been through this type of situation before, only it's crushed me, and then I choke, and it was horrible. Like, but this time I was like, why on God's earth would you think that these jokes are not funny when they have worked everywhere else except for these two times? Why does your brain do that? And the therapist had a very good, interesting thing. He goes, well, that's just your natural wiring. Your brain is engineered to fear things because it's a survival thing. Like, that's kind of part of the animal part of your brain, was his interpretation, which I also thought was interesting. And so, but I've learned to know that that's what's happening. But I need help. I need to figure out how to completely avoid this, because what happens if I have a real opportunity besides just $10,000? Like, say this is something that could make or break my career. Like, I want to be like a Peyton Manning or something. I want to have, you know, ice cold veins and go in there and do it. And he said, so we talked a little bit more about it. And then he goes, well, what is it exactly that starts to get you nervous? And Natalie and I had talked about it, and she pointed out that anytime as much as my act is sort of clean, now I kind of curse in it, but if you listen to my two albums that are out now, they're pretty clean. You know, they might be a little edgy for, you know, a more Christian, you know, crowd that doesn't, you know, like any reference to anything vulgar or whatever, but by most people's standards today, I would call myself a clean comedian, and now I curse, but I don't necessarily get crazy vulgar, except for I have in my act now, I talk about my vasectomy and having pregnant sex with my wife, but I don't think I get too graphic. So my point is, I kind of curse, but I could still work clean. But Natalie noticed that anytime somebody comes to me and says, well, we need your material to be this kind of way, that I nut up and I lose it. And then he goes, that sounds interesting. Who does that remind you of? And I couldn't think of it. You know, it took me a little bit. And I was like, I don't know. And then all of a sudden it hit me like a ton of bricks. And this was this like big, big moment that felt horrible and good at the same time, as weird as that sounds, is that all of a sudden I got hit with this moment and realization that he was talking about Jacob, my son. Oh, boy. And I apologize if people hate this part when I do this stuff. I just try to be honest because I think it helps. And I thought I was over it. I mean, for fuck's sake, this is almost a month ago. But having that connection be made for me between my son and myself, as weird as it sounds, I'd had this fear, weirdly enough, this weird fear of my son being like me, because I wanted him to be better than me. So I looked at my weaknesses and I tried to avoid passing those on. And when he made this connection, I don't know why, He didn't go into it. All just hit me like in that one moment. That what really snapped into is that my life isn't that bad. It's not that bad at all. It's not even bad, really. It's great. I have a fucking beautiful wife that I love dearly. I mean, sure, can she fill a fucking ice cube tray? No. Okay. All right. But can she bring home a fucking paycheck? Hell yes, she can. I got a sugar mama. And it just lifted this humongous weight that I hope to God, I really, this is one of those moments that I wish that I was the only one that felt this way. But there have been moments where I brought up stuff that I felt like I was the only one who felt this way. And I've gotten people commenting on Facebook or emails that say, oh, my God, I've been there. And either they're out of it or they're just getting into it. They're with it with me, all different levels. And I just found this weird sense of peace and pride and joy and relief at the fact that my son, as much as, again, it's this weird, stupid connection that I never would have made on my own, I don't think, and maybe eventually, I don't know, but that my son was just like me, and that I realized I didn't have to try to give him a good life because I already have a good life, and that it was okay for him to be like me. And then it brought back all that stuff, like I mentioned before, where I was really worried about his fear of driveways and stuff like that, and it's because when I was younger, I was a pansy, and I think it's because my mom, before my parents split up, was really like kind of, she kind of babied me. Everything was overprotective. And then once, you know, my parents split up, then my dad he kind of was able to move in and be a little bit of an edgier dad. And then, but at the same time, my stepmom also compensated, created that balance of mom that nurtures and loves regardless, and dad that's got a little bit of a, you know what I mean, like a assistant football coach, you know what I mean, where he gets in your face a little bit and says, hey, fucking get snapped, let's fall in line, asshole, you know, kind of stuff. And it just, I guess what I'm trying to say is it just felt great to kind of have that realization and to let go of that. And then now in retrospect, I look back and it's so stupid, so dumb to, and I know we talked about it a little bit with Kira, but it's just so dumb. We spend so much time, I keep saying we, I apologize to you guys, I spend so much time worrying that every move that I'm making is the right move, so foolishly, so unbelievably foolishly it's that worry I know that makes things weird, that if I, you know what I mean? There are people that spend little to no attention to their children and those children come out just fine. You know what I mean? And that all I'm trying to do is do the right thing for my kid. And weirdly enough, what if, I don't know. Now I'm babbling. Here's my point. It felt great to know that, you know, Jacob could grow up to be just like me. And even if Jack did, that he could grow up to be just like me. Also with a little bit of his mother and a little bit of his own self, obviously. But that for whatever reason, that moment and with the therapist, I felt like, oh, I'm okay. I'm setting a good example. I don't have to worry about creating a fucking Stepford Wife version of a child. You know what I mean? He doesn't need to, you know, play a cello and a violin. And you know what I mean? Like, if I don't do all of that, if he's not completely well-rounded, he's going to have a miserable, unsuccessful life. You know, that's not what's going to happen. So that felt great. That felt outstanding. So enough seriousness now. Let's move on. I want to talk about, because this is another thing that kind of tweaked me. I talk about it a little bit in my act. And it's the difference between, like, television shows. Oh, I want to talk about this first. I apologize. We'll get to that in a minute. Because I stumbled upon this. I just opened up Twitter to look at something on the feed. And I saw this really interesting story about topless in public. And it made me laugh because it's Wednesday. And I don't know if it's a morning DJ everywhere, but they whip them out Wednesday. And I've been thinking about this a lot, that I thought it would be really funny if all of... like if married people celebrated Whip 'Em Out Wednesday, instead of trying to get some college co-ed on the freeway or something like that to flash a truck driver, why not put it in a place that could actually really be wholesome and fun at the same time? Is that, and Gina talked about it on the episode I did with her, where she said, you know, she'll just, you know, occasionally flash her husband as a way of just creating a little spark. And I know the dads that listen to the show as a dad, that'd be fucking awesome. You know what I mean? You're just sitting in the house. Now, obviously, you don't want to flash your kids or whatever. But, you know, I'm just saying, right? And I know that we have moms that listen to the show. So, you know, and why not? Throw it out there, ladies. Just try it. See what it... I'm sure most of the chicks that listen to the show are already doing it. That's what I honestly think. And that's why they can listen to the show, which is essentially for dudes, even though there's a guy who hosts it that cries at movies and at Real Steel, which, by the way, somebody posted on Facebook that they saw Real Steel and asked if I cried at Over the Top, and that made me laugh because it's essentially the same movie. But I don't remember. So this lady talks about how she's in New York City and she's there doing a shoot, and then all of a sudden this chick walks by and she's completely topless. And what she thought was most interesting was that there were preteens, everybody walking by, nobody seemed to react. I'm sure that there were, especially the younger kids, maybe noticed, but for whatever reason, they didn't make a big deal about it. I thought it was interesting. She's like, I thought that there was a bit of a stir at one time over whether it was legal in New York for women to go topless on the streets. It is. You know, since men can go topless and no one bats an eye, from time to time, women have banded together to go topless in the Big Apple. But as recently as last year, women walking around doing it alone were still worthy of write-ups on city blogs. So I guess I'm one of the lucky ones who sighted a rare, solo, bare-breasted woman in the city. Interestingly, not 5 minutes later, I spotted Jimmy Fallon on a street corner. As far as I know, he and the topless woman's sighting were completely unrelated. I'll probably forget over time that I once saw Jimmy Fallon standing on the sidewalk in New York, but I have a feeling that me seeing the topless woman shopping on Fifth Avenue is destined to go down in Farrier family lore. I already told my 8-year-old daughter about it, and she was speechless, completely speechless. Oh, that's funny. She told her 8-year-old. My question for you, now that the topless took his catching in on New York, do you think it will spread across the nation? I certainly hope so. I'm curious. Obviously, as a guy, I'm like, yeah, boobies are awesome. But I think it's interesting. What would happen if in our culture, boobies weren't so taboo, I guess? Like, they were just out there like some kind of tribal civilization. And I just want to see what that does. What are guys into then? Now everybody becomes an ass man. So that's what I'm saying. Chicks, if you got a little junk in the trunk and that's your asset, let the boobies fly. Even if you're a member of the itty bitty titty committee, let them fly. Let the girls breathe. And then the more that we become desensitized to them, then all of a sudden you become the ones. Everybody is now getting even more butt implants than what they were before. And then they had another story where they actually talked to, I don't know if it was the same chick. I don't think so. This is from, this comes from the Village Voice. And am I reading the right? Yeah, Village Voice blogs. It says, yesterday we reported that a woman was spotted strolling the Bowery topless. Yes, full on topless. No bra, no shirt, just boob. Two of them. One photo suggests that the woman was getting a ticket from two cops, but some of you commenters pointed out that this lady had every right to be beating the heat in the buff. We emailed New York Police Department Deputy Commissioner of Public Information, Paul Brown, our original post, asking whether or not this woman was breaking the law. He replied, the state's highest court established long ago that women have the same right as men to appear topless in public. Absent a link to some commercial enterprise or promotion, the woman's lack of certain attire in this instance does not appear to be a police matter. I thought that was interesting. Whip them out Wednesday. Let them breathe, ladies. Let's make some magic. Let's make somebody's family vacation. Because that's the other thing I think about is that as much as I don't think I would freak out if my kids saw boobies, but I know that there are people that were, and I'm sure that they're right. In fact, this leads into the next subject that I'm weirdly desensitized to certain things. Certain things bug me. Certain things don't. But I thought that was interesting nonetheless. So here's the other thing I want to talk about, because I bitch and moan about in my act about Caillou and all these other shows. And here's my point with these shows. I think we all agree. Parents have to watch these shows too. And there are many television shows that our kids seem to be into that have no concern with the parents that also have to watch them. And I think that is a huge mistake. I think we all would agree that it's like you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot show, because if you had moms and dads on board, then guess who? Because we control the remote ultimately. And yes, there are moments where we would just like, you know, to be able to have 20 minutes to maybe make a meal for the kids or the family, or just to do something. Maybe you got to balance the checkbook or whatever. You got some errand that you got to do around the house, and it's nice to let them kind of veg out for that amount of time and know that, oh, it's fine. And they happen to like, you know, whatever, you know, bullshit show that you happen to hate. My top two at this point in time, I don't spend a lot of time over at Nickelodeon, admittedly, but my top, I have a lot of Disney and Sprout. That's what we seem to be watching a lot of. And Caillou peeks out my number one. Number two, as far as shows that we watched, was Secret Agent Oso. And then number three was probably going to be Barney. I didn't want to grab Secret Agent Oso because I thought it was irrelevant, but I did grab some clips of this. But first, what I want to play is, and this is why I brought this up, because what I think they don't understand, these shows, is that you don't, and I don't know, understand why people aren't offended by this. And I would love to hear your guys' feedback on this via the Facebook page. So if you have an opinion or whatever, please hit us up at facebook.com/dadpodcast. But I just, here's my point. It's beyond obviously throwing a joke in there that's for parents. This is beyond that. It's about talking to our kids like they're assholes. That's the part that drives me up a fucking wall. That you can have a show. The original, I talked about this a little bit on the Old Republic Radio podcast, where that they made this new trilogy. Lucas made the new trilogy of Star Wars, right? And that especially the first movie just reeks of like, oh, we made that for kids. But why is it that making something for kids also means that it has to be, you know, stupid? You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to be offensive, and so I don't mean this word in the way that I know that it's come to be. It's like, but retarded. Like, it's just, it's dumb. You have to dumb it down, and I disagree entirely. And my point is, the original trilogy was a huge success with kids, and it was great, and it wasn't talking down to them at all. Why is it that we've developed this thing? And I don't know, maybe parents that are older than me or have kids my age that listen to the show can tell me too. That's like, oh no, this has always been happening. I just feel like more recently, like as maybe once I hit about 20 something, that I just feel like all of a sudden kid shows had to talk stupid and talk to your kid like they don't understand anything. And I think that that's a huge mistake. And I'm not even talking about, because we don't do like baby talk with our kids. And to the point where I have dissertations to them about stupid stuff, you know, but I'm not getting up on a soapbox about that either. That's not my point. Of course, talk cutesy to your kids. I don't give a shit. But my real point is, why is it that what culturally came about that makes it to where I got to talk? You got to, if your kid show has to talk to my kid like he's just a brain dead vegetable, because I think what it does is that's what it makes them. And I talk about it a little bit in my act, this idea of now shows are interactive where they ask you a fucking question and then wait for an answer. That just is crazy to me. That makes no sense to me at all, because I know that there are some kids that are, you know, hyper and they're into it. But my kid especially, like, he doesn't do anything. He just sits there and stares at it. And as he's gotten older, sure, he participates. But when he's in the demo for that show, I feel like he just sits there. Like, it might as well just be a boo, like a flat line playing. He just vegs out. And I think that also that's like kind of like what a show like Yo Gabba Gabba does, where there's just so much going on. And then that DJ Lance, all I've seen is clips, so I might be unfairly judging the show. So save your email. I don't need it. I don't care. I care about you. I just don't care to be told how amazing Yo Gabba Gabba is, because I just feel like if you send me an email about that, you've already lost. Again, nothing personally. I'm sure nobody planned on doing that, but that just made me laugh that you're like, let me sell you on Yo Gabba Gabba because it is amazing. Because just the idea, hi, like, I don't like, and here's the I just feel like it's not only is it offensive in the way that it insults the intelligence of a child, but I also think that I don't know how to say this. I feel like we should be angry about it. That I feel like it creates the problem. That's what I was trying to say. That by talking to the kid like an idiot, it makes them an idiot. You see what I'm saying? Like, because they're not being stimulated. Now, here's my point. We all grew up with Bugs Bunny, right? Now, this was intended for children. I found just a rant. I didn't do a ton of research into this because I kind of wanted that to be the point. I just wanted to play a little clip of Bugs Bunny that is for kids, that is still on the Cartoon Network. This was shot in 1959. Now, also, let's look at movies. This is why I think this is a valid point. If you look at a film from the 50s and the way that it's acted and played out, that unless it's like some humongously, you know, pivotal like piece of art, you know, that people will call a film, for the most part, you watch it's like, wow, this is boring. I can't connect to it. I don't know what's going on. And here's why. I think that film then was a new medium. And so you kind of had to hold the hand of the audience. And now we're experienced and we won't tolerate fake bullshit anymore. It needs to feel like it's real. And the same thing keeps happening with special effects. As we become more aware of what they can do, we expect more, right? So that's how the film industry has grown. Acting has grown. Well, it seems, though, then by this example, that the opposite is happening for children's programming. That rather than focusing on trying to make the kids more intelligent, and I'm not saying that they need to learn, you know, every ounce of Bach or whatever or any of that crap. I'm just saying that just don't lower the bar for them entertainment-wise. That then they can grow up and, you know, be interesting people and have interesting opinions about things. I think. I don't know. But this is from 1959, Bugs Bunny, Wild and Woolly Hair.
Any one of you lily-livered, bow-legged varmints care to slap leather with me? In case any of you get any ideas, you better know who you're dealing with. I'm the hootinest, tootinest, shootinest, bobtail wildcat in the West. I'm the fastest gun north, south, east, and west of the Pecos. I'm the...
Yeah, shut up!
Did I hear someone say shut up?
That's funny.
Yep.
Stranger, you just yupped yourself into a hole in the head.
You've been eating onions.
And you're gonna be eating lead. I'm a warning you, stranger!
I think it's fair to warn you. I swing a fair shooting iron myself. You see that church bell out there? I'll carom a shot off in it, then off that water tower, through the window, off the bottle on this bar, then part your hair right down the middle.
Ha! You missed!
Wait.
Do you call that shooting? I'll show you some real shooting. Now, beat that, varmint.
Gee, that's tough. But I'll try.
He threw the can up in the air, followed it down, and then shot Yosemite Sam. Hilarious. Now, here's my point. They don't talk to the kid like he's an idiot. They don't over-explain the theme. They don't over-explain the tone. Not everything is completely on the nose. Now, is every moment you just listen to that? And I know it's a visual medium, but even listening to it, you could tell that there's no point in them trying to feel like they have to explain what's going on or anything. Even the tempo of it feels like an adult-style conversation, in my opinion. Now, you contrast that with this is from an episode of Barney, Just Right for Me, Part 1, which I think is some Barney's My Family's or something like that. I think it's like an episode of Barney where they talk about how everybody has a different family. Now, just listen to the way these kids talk.
Oh, no! He's tangled up in the jump rope again!
Oh, sorry, kids! Oh, I guess dinosaur tails and jump ropes will never mix! I got so carried away listening to your family rhymes, I wanted to join in the fun myself!
It's a fun game to play, Barney!
Why didn't you join in, Kathy?
Because I only know the verses about the mommy, and Tina and Derek said them.
Well, next time, just join in on any verse you know, Kathy.
Or make up your own. I love to do that.
Even one about my Teddy? He's like a brother to me.
Sure, the more verses about family, the better. That's what the show is all about.
Show? Oh,
Now, see what I'm saying here? Now, I know that a lot of people commented on, like, because they're from the 50s or whatever, that people feel that Merry Melodies was very violent and that it's too much for the kids. Now, in my opinion, any amount of cartoon violence where a rabbit shoots a dude in the face and he comes, you know what I mean? Like, I think that is 10,000, what is 10,000 times more offensive is to expose kids to this being the way that you talk. You know what I mean? I just feel like, I don't know, and I'm sure I'm way out of scope here for somebody who has experienced some kind of form of, you know, a gun accident or something in their family. My attempt is not to be insensitive. My attempt is to just to say that let's look at the greater picture of it. Is that do we really think that, you know, Bugs Bunny has that much of an impact as a role model on a child compared to looking at real kids talking like they're fake? They're just ah, da, 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 da. Because that makes me want to shoot somebody in the face, to be honest. I'm like, shut the hell up. And I know that these are just kids, that this is what they're supposed to do. And then again, to me, the ultimate culprit is fucking Caillou.
Sometimes waiting for something is the hardest thing to do.
Come on, Gilbert, you can do it. Jump, Gilbert.
Caillou was trying to teach Gilbert a new trick, but Gilbert wasn't very interested.
Come on, Gilbert, you can do it. Jump! Lie down, Gilbert. Lie down. Stay. Gilbert!
It's snowing outside.
Mommy! Mommy!
What is it, Caillou?
It's snowing! It's snowing!
Aren't the snowflakes pretty?
Can I go outside and play?
Of course you can.
Yay!
I hate this. He's putting on his clothes.
I was in a big hurry to go outside.
Whoa there. I think you'll be walking around in circles like that.
He's got one shoe on completely backwards.
I walk like a duck. Quack, quack. I'm gonna build a snowman.
Now, in what world is that cute? You know what I mean? My kid has said cute stuff and done cute things. But when it's that, like, fucking cheesy, schmoozy, cute, that just makes me want to vomit. I just hate that shit so much because it's not real. You know what I mean? If your kid has a real cute moment because it's sincere and it comes from his heart, but when they're trying to do something for the sake of pretending to be cute, because here's honest to God what happened. My son was watching Caillou because my wife is a big fan of Sprout. Understandably so. I like a lot of the shows on there. This is the only one that I'm like, this is fucking bullshit. Because he started talking like a baby. Started doing that caveman talk where before he was had great, you know, language. He could have a conversation with most anybody. And then all of a sudden he's like, he does this caveman talk like, this is what I'm a ducking. Quick, quick, quick. And I'm like, no, no, no. Because that's... so fucking annoying. And none of that is as an adult, can you sit and enjoy and appreciate? Because you know what I think when I watch Caillou? I think I hate his fucking parents. Because here's a kid who talks like he's a fucking baby doll. And at no point do we ever get a fair representation. And I know this is a lot to expect, but I still think it would be awesome. Just once and I talk about this in my act, that once I would like Caillou's parents to just tell him to shut up. Just so, you know what I mean? Just so you feel like you're normal. I'm sure maybe not all of you listening have lashed out at your kid or anything like that. I don't do it all the time. I'm just saying that no family is that fucking happy. And that's an unfair bar. If you know what I mean? Like, and because I always feel like they do this because it's like, well, shouldn't kids think that the world is happy? No, I don't think they should. I think that they should know what the world is to a certain extent. You know what I mean? Obviously, I'm not saying let's all watch a World War II documentary before we start kindergarten. That's not my point either. I'm just saying we don't need to paint this picture that eventually gets yanked out from underneath them. And maybe I'm getting a little too pulpity or whatever, but I do think that. I do think that this is just fake, zero-calorie, useless bullshit. There's no opportunity for them to pick up anything, in my opinion, from this crap. And I apologize. I'm not saying it should get yanked from the airwaves. I don't want to take away jobs from anybody that has it on Caillou. I just wish that there was a show, and I venture a guess that the people who work on the show, other than the crazy bat nuts person that created it, that they think that, well, they wish they could be working on something else, something that was more. Oh, I'm going to find that real quick because I think everybody who is a fan of the Disney Channel is also a fan of Phineas and Ferb. And that is a great show. That is a great show that I think, you know, as if you want to, I mean, maybe I'm searching, I don't know. But I think there's positive messages where these kids, they kind of create stuff out of nothing, even though it's surreal and they've got balls. So I'm just going to pick a video and see if, I hope this is an actual one, just to listen to the difference.
There's 104 days of summer vacation.
Not to mention the song is absolutely hilarious and just random stuff. But here's a little clip of Phineas and Ferb.
But that was before I had this.
That looks like a color-coded schedule.
That's because it is. Every minute of my entire day is planned out right here. Remember how you told me to seize the day? Consider it seized.
That's not exactly what I meant.
Hey, is it time for me yet?
Not quite. Okay, now.
Do you have any extra time for a bubble?
I guess I have time for one.
Oh, can I blow a super huge one so I can crawl inside it and float around like a little woodland pixie? Did I just say that out loud?
Yes, you did. But that actually sounds fun minus the pixie part. Ferb, I know what we're gonna do today. There's no better way to see Danville than from inside a huge bubble.
So, and for those of you who have seen the show, you know they have these fun conventions. That's how everything starts. Every episode starts where they do a little opening, and then all of a sudden he figures out, I know what we're going to do today. We're going to build this thing. And then the, you know, the platypus has these great secret agent adventures and all that stuff. And there's great funny bits. I honestly feel that the platypus storyline is more for the adults and the rest is kind of for the kids. But that's a show that is equally entertaining, in my opinion, to the kids as it is to the adults. And that's why that show is a success. And that's why you will never hear a parent say Phineas and Ferb is a piece of shit. But whenever I talk, no matter what comedy club I've been in, all I have to do when I'm talking about kids shows that drive me nuts is say the word Caillou. And I literally get a ugh from the crowd because people, the parents, fucking hate this show. Fucking hate it. I don't even know how you could like Barney or fucking Caillou. It drives me up a goddamn wall. So there's that. So now what I want to do, we're wrapping up here. We had another, I guess, poop story that I missed that came in via email. So let me pull up my fantastic music that I'm very proud of. And there we go. We're going to do another poop story of the week. I think it was a lot of fun for us before. This one, I guess, comes to us from Tessa's blog, is what if I'm picking this up. I haven't read this, but she sent it to us via message on the Facebook. So it says, my poop horror story lifted from my blog. It is called The Brownberry Incident. I like it because I've been watching Downton Abbey, and for whatever, Brownberry Incident. I wish I could do an accent. That would be much better. It was the summer of 1999. Our small family of three had spent that lazy afternoon picking blackberries, which grew wild in the empty lot near our house. While I managed to get a lot of berries in my bucket, my son mostly held his berries in his belly. It was a fun afternoon. He was only 2 years old at the time. My son was potty training, but still in diapers. We were hosting hubby's parents who were going to attend a high school class reunion. Their best friends were also visiting. Being a good little host, I was entertaining the four seniors in the living room when my boy toddled in. I like that term. My first thought was, how did he get chocolate? There was brown stuff all over him, his hands, his face, his legs. And the second thought was, oh my God, that's not chocolate. See, what we figured out happened was he wanted to be a big boy and go to the potty himself. He only managed to get the tab off on one side of the diaper. The other side was too hard to open. So instead of opening it, he just climbed up on the potty and went. Unfortunately, the runny poop that had come out didn't really make it into the potty and instead mostly hit the diaper and smeared the toilet. It gets worse. Knowing he didn't quite do it right, he decided to elicit help from mom or dad. He went looking for us. He tracked brown buried down the hall into my husband's office. Then he decided to look at our bedroom, also in his bedroom. Unsuccessful, he went to the living room, and we all took in the horror. It was a very bad day. There was a moment of paralysis. I couldn't even think what to do first. I tossed the boy in the bathtub, but what about the carpet and the poo all over the bathroom? And how could I ever kiss that boy again? There was poo in his hair. We did manage to clean it up with only a couple of freakouts in front of the in-laws. I say that even though we ended up moving out of that house and ripping the carpet out. So there is our poop story of the week. I got another email. I think this is from Chris that I met in Des Moines that I've been meaning to go over for read it for a while now, and I keep missing it. So I have time left in the show, so I figure why not throw it in here. It says, hi, Justin. First of all, love the podcast. I started listening to it about 7 months ago before my daughter was born. She's 6 months now. I was looking for a genuine, funny podcast from a dad's perspective that released new episodes more than barely ever, and the dad podcast fit the bill. No pun intended. Too soon? Never too soon. This is our first baby, and we've been extremely lucky to have one that barely fusses, started sleeping through the night at 6 weeks. Now people hate you, Chris, and has been very quiet on the couple of plane trips we've taken her on so far. More people hating you. It's been so awesome. Everyone who's met her can't believe how calm, well-behaved she is, and several have joked that we can't have another because there's no way we'll be this lucky a second time. Those people are right. Well, we found out this week after my wife missed her period that we're pregnant again. The one middle of the night fling where I didn't put on a raincoat. It's exciting and surprising, but how screwed am I going to be having two kids barely a year apart? We haven't told our families yet, but are laughing at the Irish twins' predicament we now find ourselves in. FML, etc. I don't know what that means. I'm sorry. I'm not cool with texting. But keep up the great work. And that's great. So, yeah. Thank you, Chris. That's cool. Congratulations. I do want to say this because I talked about it a little bit. I think this was Chris. This is hilarious. Is that at the beginning of the show, I can't remember your name, and I apologize to the lovely lady who sent me this great email when I was kind of talking about how frustrated I was with having two kids and all that stuff back in the I almost left incident kind of thing, which I never would have really done, obviously. But anyway, she told me that her kids essentially were the same age difference as my sons and that they were, you know, I think she said like 9 and 7 or 11 and 9, somewhere around there. And that it's great because now they play together and her husband have so much free time to enjoy each other. So while I might be shitting on everybody else's joy of listening to me miserable and scared and all that stuff, there is a little bit of a light at the tunnel, possibly. I don't know. Bill's kids were only a little bit older than mine, and when they went to school, he had to quit doing the show. So maybe there's something I don't understand what is to come in the future, but that's what I'm holding on to, bro. That's what I've got here locked up in me. So stay with us, man. Stay with us. Here's another email that I missed somehow. I'm so sorry, guys, if I'm missing these emails. This comes to us from Scott. He says, hey, guys, I've been listening to the show for a few months now, and I love it. There's nothing more encouraging than listening to a couple of guys talk about their families and lives. Justin, I got done listening to your solo episode about Jack punching you like a heavy bag, and I could tell you I've been in your shoes before. Oh, I did read this a little bit. This is interesting. I have a 2- and 6-year-old boy and an almost 4-year-old daughter in the middle. First, let me say she is tough as nails and can hold her own with either brother. My wife and I both work, but I get off work sooner, and thus I am in charge of the kids for post-day care and dinner time. Once we get home, that is when my daughter turns on her naughty thrusters and starts picking on the boys, which makes my job that much tougher in getting food ready and getting the troops settled. Anyway, I was trying to get my daughter corralled to the table to eat, and I played the timeout card if she decided not to listen to me. After a few screams and naughty little frowns, she went to timeout, and then I heard the words, I don't like you, Dad, and had a similar reaction to you. I think it means that I did. It hurt a little inside, but I put on the leather skin and stayed my ground. Then my wife gets home. She gets out of timeout, and basically, it's a shit-in-my-coffee moment. I also have dealt with grandmas wanting to parade my kids around despite their desperate need for nap times. Even my brothers, who all have older kids now, seem to think it is stupid and ridiculous that we make our kids take naps when we get together for holidays or special events. Why? How? How is that stupid? That makes no sense. I didn't know this was a common thing. I just thought it was, you know, my bat nuts crazy in-laws. But I just don't. How frustrating that must be to where, because I know what that feels. I'm imagining that when you're in that situation, you get people like to treat you like, oh, you're a pussy parent. You can't take charge of your children. It's this weird thing that we do. It's almost like reading books when you're a kid. You don't want to be a nerd, you know? So it's like, oh, you know what? You really want to be good at being a parent? You want to care about your kid? You know, like they make fun of you about that. So I know that feeling where it's like, I don't want to. And you get, it puts you in this weird fucked up headspace that I'm really working hard at eliminating because I've had it flag and I want to fall in line. But now I go, yeah, no, that's what we're going to do. That's why I yanked my kid out of there and said, we're going to take a nap. And then he punched me in the face. It was well worth it. But yeah, I'm sorry. I got off track. But anyway, what they don't get is that if they don't get their naps, it's like feeding a mogwai after midnight. Yes, they spin green cocoons and turn into gremlins. I completely get our point that we as parents should always take our kids' well-being first as opposed to parading them around to satisfy everyone else's needs to see the kids. Justin, you are not alone by any means. Wanted you to know that. I love your moment of the week. You guys do each week. My oldest son, Adam's moment of the week, came at his kindergarten music concert this week. As all the kids were clumsily shuffling on stage, a classmate of his slipped next to him, and he quickly put out his arm to stop him from falling. He then looked at my wife and I in the audience, smiled, put his thumb up as if to say, don't worry, I got this. Doesn't get much prouder than that. Kudos to you guys. Keep the episodes rolling. Love it. Scott from Sioux City, Iowa. Thanks, Scott. That was awesome. I like that. And I think that does it for our emails. Yeah, I got that one. Nailed it. Well, then let's wrap it up, bitches. I feel like there was something else. I'm going to take a moment right now to myself and just make sure there was not something else I wanted to say. So excuse me.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
I did have one more thing that I thought was kind of an interesting story. My son came back from Grandma and Grandpa's. He went on a trip with Route 66 with my dad and my stepmom and had a great time. But as we've all experienced, when they come back from that wonderful break that you get where you get to remind, you get to remember how much you love them and miss them and all that stuff. But then you always kind of forget that when they come back, you have to prepare yourself that they're going to be little shitheads because they're used to getting a lot of what they want. Even if your parents are kind of on board with how you raise them, there's still that there's a difference. There's a dynamic shift that and then when they come back in, they just like to crank it on. My dad always says, and I've even seen it with my nieces and nephews, that it's no creation of them, of the grandparents. Like it's honestly like I've hung out with my nieces and nephews while my grandparents while they were at their grandparents, my parents, obviously. And they were great, cool kids, fun times, you know, had moments, I'm sure. And but then as soon as the parents walk in the door, it is like. It's like some kind of pheromone gets released and they turn into total assholes for this like brief moment until mom and dad go, hey, fucking fall in line. And then everything goes back to normal. Well, unfortunately for us, my wife had one of those moments. And then maybe because of the length of the trip, but I was gone on the road. We had our fantastic sitter was here taking care of him. And for the first time, she's been with us for almost a year now. For the first time, she had to like send Jacob to his room. Like she's never had to discipline him. No problem. And she had to, she posted house rules. Like it was weird because it was weird for me. Not that I disagree with anything that she did, but it's a weird thing to walk into your own house and have your babysitter explain to you how parenting has happened. You know what I mean? And I think what she did was right. I think that she did stuff that supported what we had already put in place, but she obviously needed to call an audible. And in order to, you know, maintain control and do her job. So, but it is, it's anybody who's experienced that, it's a weird off, like it just kind of knocks you off balance a skosh, you know? And so what she did, which I thought was pretty brilliant, was that she sat down and wrote out house rules, which I'd seen on like Super Nanny, I think it was, and where they have to have the house rules posted. So she has like 7 rules and wrote them out and talked to him. Obviously, I think went over them with him. And then explain the consequences and posted them on a door. So we leave them up now. And then she has like a Ziploc bag, one of those gallon Ziploc bags. And every time he breaks a rule, she takes away a toy. But the immediately when he abides by the rule or shows an example of the rule, he gets to free a toy. So he had lost 4 toys. And then, but by the time I'd gotten home, had only had 1 left, right? And then it was awesome. Because I come home from the road. I've been flying since 3 o'clock in the morning, local my time, West Coast time, and traveling since then. So I'm a little out of it, and I'm getting all this information. I'm like, wow, okay, yeah, sure. And then Jacob goes, well, can I have my Leonardo? And I love her. She's great. I don't want this to sound as criticism towards her. I don't think it is, so I'm going to stop saying that. But the sitter goes, well, your dad's in charge now. You know? I thought was just a funny dynamic that I don't think my parents ever really had to deal with, is that this idea of the babysitter relinquishing control of the comm. You know what I mean? It was like a captain leaving the bridge of a ship. And it's like, you know, like Jean-Luc Picard, number one, you have the comm, you have the bridge, you know, that kind of, it just kind of made me giggle. And then I had to figure out how to do it her way. Like I had to, for a good hour, I had to be like, okay, so I have to transition and I have to do what she did so that there is a level of consistency for the kid. But it was just weird to have to parent my kid in a way that just didn't make me go, oh, this is my way. So that made me laugh. Moments of the week. You love them. You want to choke them. But mostly you love them. My moment of the week, actually, it's happened over the past couple of days. I mentioned it a long time ago on the show, but and I know that there's at least one listener. I want to say it's like the Wade family or something like that, that does geocaching. And so anybody who's new to the show that doesn't remember me mentioning it, Geocaching is a fun little nerdy type hobby. And what it is somebody will take like an Altoid tin, or if you're in a more rural area, they might even have a 5-gallon bucket. Or today we found one that was an envelope that was made out of duct tape. And then it's, you know, so you find these little things, you find a hiding spot for it. And then you use your GPS, or you could use like a smartphone. They have an app for like $10 that you could get. And geocaching is spelled GEOCACHING. And you log on to the, and then you upload the GPS coordinates and you give it like a name and a little description. And it's like a little, you know, scavenger hunt. And so I recently, because I did a lot when I first found out about it, we did it on the Route 66 trip with Jacob a couple years ago. And he was a little too young, but still thought it was cool. Was really just interested in seeing, because what they do is they'll put like little trinkets in it. And the rule is that you can take something out if you replace it with something of equal or greater value, is the idea. And he just liked to look to see what kind of trinkets that were in there. And of course, you had to explain to him he can't take the trinkets. And then recently I had to explain to him he can't take the geocache. But it might be like they'll hot glue magnets in the bottom of an Altoids tin and then stick it underneath like a newspaper dispenser or something like that. We found one of those. I found the duct tape wallet type thing or envelope was wedged in like a crack in a telephone pole behind a pole. So it's these little things that are hidden, and they could be as small as like the top of a pencil, like a pencil eraser. Those are called nano caches, and they're magnetic on the bottom. So we found one of those today. And so it's really helped me to get out of the house and to get some walking, because I felt like I was, you know, borderline agoraphobic because I couldn't get the boys out of the house. And I just kind of realized if you just make yourself do it, then it can happen. And so we go out for 45 minutes and I push Jack in the stroller. I load up his Jacob's bike in the minivan. We go out, boom. And you can see it on the app, find a little spot where there's just two or three, and you can easily kill 30 minutes looking around for them. And the kids may not be able to find them depending on their age, but what I do is I find it, and now that Jacob's old enough, I let him go get it. And he was having the time of his life, and he just, to the point where we had some free time today, I had to go run some errands, and I said, well, Jacob, we can go to the park, or we can just go on a walk, and you can ride your bike, or we can go geocaching. He goes, huh, this is my moment. This is what I love. And I go, and we were listening to music, so I turned the music down. I go, son, are you listening to me? Like kind of doing that frustrating thing, you know, how where you have to say the same thing 8 times to your kids. And he goes, yeah, Dad, I'm just thinking. Like he wasn't snapping back at me, but he was genuinely like mulling over his options, which I thought was fucking adorable. I was so happy about it. And oh, I got another one. I'm going to do 2 because that reminded me of something else. So anyway, the he goes, I want to go geocaching. So we went geocaching. And I had a similar moment today when I came home from the road with Jack. He was asleep. And so the sitter, Jacob had woken up with a sitter. He'd already taken his nap. And he goes, well, Jack went down, blah, blah, blah. So he woke up from his nap. And I went in there. And I've been gone for almost a week, this leg that I just did in Des Moines. And I come in there. And he opened his eyes. And he looked at and he kind of started to cry almost, like he got scared a little bit. And then all of a sudden, I think he realized that it was me. And it was so weird. I know we talked about it a long time ago, back when I was doing the show with Bill, that those troops surprises when you come home and how you cry like a girl when you watch them, and it gives you all this perspective. It was kind of weird to see my 10-month-old son kind of have that kind of, I'm not, you know what I mean? Let me make clear. I'm not saying that it's like I'm fighting the good fight. No, I'm a fucking pussy. And with those guys, and I know we have some guys in the armed forces that listen to the show. Thank you guys for everything you do. And thank you for being so willing to, you know, obviously not willing, but to sacrifice being away from your families and all that stuff. All that stuff. What an asshole. You know what I mean? But it was funny. That was like a little tiny taste for me to see him just have this magical look on his face. Like, and he touched my face almost like it wasn't real, like it wasn't happening. And it just made me feel so good. You know, like it's you get caught up all the time in your day to day stuff that sometimes it's nice to have them, even though I think it's an unfair expectation necessarily. But it's nice to have my 10-month-old son make me feel like he loves me, too. You know, kind of thing. That's why that was a particular moment. This next one, go ahead and skip ahead because it has a little bit of a spoiler alert about the Avengers movie, because I went to go see it in Des Moines and my son went to go see it with my dad while he was on this trip with him. And so when I came back home, I go, did you like the Avengers movie? He's like, yeah, it was great. And so here's what I'm going to talk about the movie part. So skip ahead, please, because I don't want to ruin anything. But there was a part of the movie that was absolutely my favorite part. And I said, well, what was your favorite part, son? And I'd actually talked about it with Heath Heitch, who was the comic I was with this last week in Des Moines. And he goes, what do you think your son is going to say about the movie? I said, he's probably going to like the Hulk because he's on like a Hulk thing right now. But I don't like, he goes, do you think he's going to talk about when Thor or when he punched Thor or any of that stuff? And I go, I don't know. I don't know if he gets that stuff. And so the best part of this movie is by far when, still talking about Avengers, skip more ahead, that Loki gives like that great speech, for those of you who've seen it or don't care. He gives this great speech, like Hulk comes in, he's like, you listen to me, you animal or whatever. He goes, I am a god. And then he just disappears from frame, and then they have this master shot, and the Hulk is just swinging the villain around like a rag doll, just banging him around. You know what I mean? Like just the way like a gorilla swings like a leaf or a branch is in a way of intimidation, like just laying him and then puts him down and goes, puny god. Like it was so hilarious. I cried again for that when I was watching that. I buckled over and laughed hysterically. And so when I came home, I go, what was your favorite part? And Jacob said, when the Hulk swung Loki. And he was so excited about it. He goes, it was funny. And I go, yes, it was, son. And I hugged him, and that was absolutely incredible. So those are moments of the week brought to you by Stitcher. For those of you who don't know what Stitcher is, it is an amazing free app. That's right. It does not cost you a dime. So for those of you that are obviously fans of podcasts and you're traveling for your job, or maybe you don't have time, you don't like to have to sync up. It sucks for those of us that stock up on podcasts, all of a sudden you run out. You're out of the show that you like listening to, and you know there's more because you haven't synced it with your computer yet. If you had Stitcher, you wouldn't have to worry about that. You can go back and listen to the back catalog now. It used to be that it was just the current one. So if you have any kind of smartphone, BlackBerry, Droid-operated phone, iPhone, any of those, all you got to do is go to thedadpodcast.com, click on the Stitcher logo on the left-hand side, and then tell them what kind of phone you have. They'll take you to where you can get it, put it on your phone, and then you stream the podcast through your cell phone's data connection, or if you have Wi-Fi available, like if you want to listen while you're at work or whatever, that also works. They let you share episodes with friends from Facebook. They do a great thing where they recommend episodes or other podcasts. If you like the Dad Podcast, they'll tell you. You may also like Naptime Radio, our good friends over there, the mom version of the show, which I guess hopefully we're gonna have them on or do a vice versa, or I'm gonna be on their show in the coming month. I'm excited about that. Love the hell of those chicks. You can find them at naptimeradio.com. Please continue to go to thedadpodcast.com and click through the Amazon banner, because it doesn't cost you anything and we get a little money that, you know, to help support the show. I appreciate all you guys listening. The big thing I want to do is I want to say thank you for continuing to listen through the transition. Numbers have not even, you know, shifted in any way, shape, or form. I appreciate that. We've even gotten more new listeners. More and more people are finding the show. So I can't thank you guys enough for helping to spread the word. I love doing it. Hope you guys like listening to it. So on behalf of myself and my two boys sleeping upstairs and the fantastic two fish that survived the great fish death of long ago, this is Justin Worsham saying, stay frosty.